There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
We've won the gay marriage battle. Are we now going to neuter the First Amendment for people who still disagree with us?
I think it's always a temptation for us as Christians to want to find some sort of ideological system or economic system that will make us completely comfortable in our skin in this fallen world.
A Bible sermon is one in which the preacher is giving us information. So they're telling us about roads in Palestine. They're telling us about cultures. But that is not necessarily for me.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steelworker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues Etc. all day long.
Well, it was back in 1925, on this very day in 1925, when jury selection began for a trial that in many ways was, it's hard to say it was a legitimate trial. It was a test case. It was a publicity stunt. It had two of the most famous attorneys on either side of an issue of whether or not a biology teacher by the last name of Scopes, John T. Scopes, had actually violated a law against teaching evolution in the classroom. Now, Scopes couldn't even remember if he had ever taught evolution or not, but he admitted to having done it for the sake of the trial. How did that come out? Very often, the so-called Scopes monkey trial is cited as, well, practically legal precedent for the validity of evolution. Is it true? Dr. David Menton will join us here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois, and thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, we're going to talk about something you've probably never heard of by name, Keswick theology. I'm positive you've never heard of that before, but you have found it. You have encountered it everywhere in American Christianity. This theology that says there's a two-tier kind of Christianity. You can get saved, but then the rest of your life is a progressive work of surrender. You've ever heard this? I've heard Christians say, you know, I got saved back in 1984, but I didn't really give my whole heart to Jesus then. I just found out recently there's some parts of my heart I hadn't given to him. I need this continual life of surrender. It creates a two-tier, multi-tiered Christianity. We'll talk Keswick theology with Pastor Matt Richard in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Then Pastor Hal Sinkby will join us. We'll answer the question, why do so many pastors quit? Estimated over the course of a career, 50% drop out. 50%. That's I don't even know if that statistic is accurate, although it is stunning to think about how many pastors who do admit to thinking about quitting the pastoral ministry over the course of the last 3 months of their life. Why? What's wrong? We'll answer that question with Dr. Hal Sinkbaum. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Joining us to mark the anniversary of the beginning of jury selection for the so-called Scopes monkey trial back in 1925, and to explain what that trial was really all about, Dr. David Menton, associate professor of anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis, and he's speaker and researcher for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Menton, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
What's the biggest myth you think persists in all the conversations I'm sure you have had about evolution, and there's a lot of reference to the Scopes monkey trial. What's the biggest myth that persists about that trial back in 1925?
Actually, there are about two dozen myths competing for top place. But if you force me to come up with the very, very biggest, it would be the basic essence of what people think the trial was about. And that is that the trial was a group of fundamentalist Christians in Dayton, Tennessee, who became upset when biology teacher John Scopes taught evolution in the classroom, and they took him to court and put him in jail and fined him and just treated him very shabbily. Now, nothing in that whole scenario is true. John Scopes was not the biology teacher. He taught math and coached the football team. He only taught 1 year in Ray County School District, in fact, 1 year out of his whole life. He never taught evolution, as he said in his own autobiography. It wasn't the folks of Dayton, Tennessee that took him, that had the idea of taking him to court. It was the American Civil Liberties Union. Perhaps you've heard of them. The American Civil Liberties Union out of New York City initiated this by offering to take on a teacher from the state of Kentucky who would do a test case to challenge the Butler Act in a court of law. And some resident of the city of Dayton, a guy named John Raplea, decided to go along with that, and he coaxed a friend of his who was the teacher, John Scopes, into participating. So that kind of sets the record straight on several things in one shot.
All right. I'd like to go back over some of those in a little more detail. But first of all, what was the Butler Act? What was the law that was at least allegedly on trial here when it came to the teaching of evolution or teaching period was taught in the classrooms?
Okay, well, the Butler Act was really one of 20 bills that were very similar that were passed in 20 different states in the 1920s that dealt with the teaching of the evolution of man in the public schools. Specifically, the Butler Act in Dayton, Tennessee, said that it would be unlawful for a teacher in the public schools of Tennessee to, and now I quote, to teach any theory that denies the story of the divine creation of man as taught in the Bible, and to teach instead that man has descended from a lower order of animals, end of quote. So you'll note that the law expressly forbid teaching that man evolved from a lower order of animals rather than being divinely created. It did not forbid the teaching of any other kind of evolution. You could have taught the evolution of life from non-life, evolution of amphibians into reptiles and reptiles into mammals. It forbids the teaching that man, and of course that was a bitter pill for Christians. Some of the liberal Christians, even back in the 1920s, could tolerate evolution. They just kind of wanted to hold man high and dry up above evolution. And the thing, if we've learned anything in the intervening years since 1925, we've learned that you can't hold anything above evolution. Evolution purports to explain the origin of virtually everything that's real. And that includes, by the way, religion itself.
Would you go so far as to say that at least we're only talking about less than 90 years, 89 years ago? There are people who are alive who can remember, perhaps as children, hearing about the Scopes monkey trial. Is it safe to say that evolution as a not just a subject in the biology classroom or the science classroom, but as a worldview, has proven to be fairly totalitarian?
Oh, very much so. Back then, they were pretty much hat in hand. Creation had held sway in the classroom, I think, for a number of years, at least acknowledging a creator. And the American Civil Liberties Union was particularly upset by these bills that tried to prevent at least teaching the evolution of man from beasts. And it shows how dangerous it is when Christians try to take a reductionist view here and say, well, okay, you can teach evolution. We just want to keep man above it. And then eventually you give in and say, okay, so man evolved too. But we want to keep his soul. The Roman Catholic Church did that. You know, God does the ensoulment. Evolution produces the human from non-humans, but God puts the soul in. Well, the professional evolutionists, with a rare exception, don't believe in the existence of the soul. So if you want to claim for that, go ahead. But evolutionists do claim that evolution explains the origin of virtually everything that is real. So if it's not real, creation can deal with that.
Okay. Let's see. First, a little perspective, Dr. Menton. It seems just almost forgotten that it was less than 100 years ago that there were concerns about evolution being taught in the classroom. or that creation in some form, albeit maybe just a very cursory form, was being countenanced in the classroom. How would you describe kind of the biology education up to this point, up to the point of where evolution started to encroach upon the classroom?
Well, we might look at, as Exhibit A, Hunter Civic Biology, which was the textbook that was used in Dayton, Tennessee in the schools at the time, and was one of two or three of the most popular textbooks being used in biology courses in the 1920s. And to show you that Hunter's Civic Biology did in fact teach that man evolved from beasts, let me quote directly from the book so that you can see just what it was that the American Civil Liberties Union was defending. I quote, "If we follow the early history of man upon the earth, we find that at first he must have been little better than one of the lower animals. At the present time, there exist upon earth five races or varieties of man. The highest type of all, the Caucasians, represented by the civilized white inhabitants of Europe and America." It goes on to say about these less civilized people, "If such people were lower animals, we would probably kill them off to prevent them from spreading." It then goes on to say, "We do have the remedy of separating the sexes in asylums or other places and in various ways of preventing intermarriage and the possibilities of perpetuating such a low and degenerate race." This is what, at least indirectly, the American Civil Liberties Union was defending in 1925 in the Scopes case.
Now, that is of kind of stunning historical surprise there, but is that teaching, that those conclusions drawn there so kind of almost naively in that biology textbook, are they consistent with an evolutionary view of man?
Well, you know, a lot of the initial opposition to evolution in the classroom wasn't the teaching of evolution itself, as long as it was taught as, you know, as a theory or a speculation. People were willing, in fact, William Jennings Bryan, who was the lawyer for the prosecution in the Scopes case against John Scopes, the teacher. Bryan was not at all opposed to evolution being taught in the schools. He just wanted to make sure that it was taught as a theory and that teachers would have an opportunity to present a skeptical or a different point of view or a creation view. But the thing that really set people off early against evolution, I'm talking about laymen now, is this whole essential eugenics that goes along with evolution. The whole idea of the Übermensch that Hitler took to its logical conclusion, in fact, he called his book Mein Kampf, or My Struggle, reflecting the struggle for existence that occurs in natural selection. So it was this idea that not only that man came from beasts, but the implication that there were then higher and lower humans. And this whole idea of a super race that could be raised and that this would prevail over inferior people. This was one of the greatest offenses that the people at large had against evolution. Evolutionists today, of course, are much more careful in what they say in this area. But I believe that evolution is intrinsically compatible with the eugenics movement. In fact, the eugenics movement grew out of evolution. Darwin's grandson, Sir Richard Dalton, was the father of modern eugenics.
Dr. David Menton is our guest. We're talking about the Scopes Monkey Trial on this July the 10th. On this day back in 1925, jury selection began for that trial. We'll talk about the trial itself right after this.
Like angels, can we break out of the grind? We're destined to be Darwin's children this time.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
One of the most surprising discoveries I have found in church history that Christians usually did not realize or recognize the effects their actions had when they heeded Christ's words, "Let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven."
Dr. Alvin Schmidt speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Their actions were byproducts of God's redeeming love that was theirs in the crucified and risen life of Jesus Christ. In time, many Christian values and practices became integrated parts of Western culture. And the Christian didn't really quite realize it, as we don't to this day.
You can listen to Dr. Schmidt's presentation, Making the Case for Christianity's Positive Impact on Civilization, on our new audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this day back in 1925, jury selection began for a trial called, come to be known as the Scopes Monkey Trial, which was part PR, part test case, not really of any real bearing legally, it appears. No one appeared to have any legal goals when it came to the Scopes Monkey Trial. They did have goals. What they were? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later as Dr. David Menton continues our conversation on the Scopes Monkey Trial. I invite your questions or your comments live this Thursday, July the 10th, 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. Now, you mentioned that the American Civil Liberties Union decided they wanted to test this one of these some 20 laws, this one called the Butler Act. Give us a brief story of how they got it to a courtroom, how they got two of the nation's most prominent attorneys, famous household names both then and today, to participate.
Well, that's an interesting story. First of all, once they decided that they would do the test case in Tennessee, and I'm not sure why they picked that state out of 20 possibilities, they then put an advertisement in the Chattanooga newspaper advertising for a teacher of science who would be willing to test the Butler Act in the courts, all expenses to be paid by the American Civil Liberties Union. A Dayton resident by the name of John Raplea was in Chattanooga at the time. He was involved with a mine, iron and coal mining operation in Dayton, and he was from New York himself and was trained in mining geology. He saw the ad, and he wanted to participate in part because he agreed, I guess, with the position of the ACLU, but probably primarily he was interested in attracting attention to the city of Dayton, a small town in Tennessee, to promote his mining and coal interests there to get investments. So that was really one of his objectives. The people of Dayton, Tennessee themselves had very little to do with it, and they certainly weren't complaining about Scopes or anyone else teaching evolution in the classroom. So how they managed to get to the top-tier people, first it was Brian, one of the lawyers defending Scopes, by the name of Sue Hicks, who, by the way, happens to be the famous boy named Sue in the Johnny Cash song. Sue Hicks, a man, came up with the idea of getting William Jennings Bryan to participate in the trial. Bryan was very, very well known at the time. He had been Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson. He was ahead of the Democratic Party for nearly 30 years, politically rather liberal for his time, but conservative on Christian issues, and was well known as an outspoken Christian. So they thought, boy, that's going to really get the publicity if we can just get Brian in here. And, of course, once having selected Brian, the opposition went out and got the famous criminal lawyer, Clarence Darrow, arguably the best criminal lawyer of his day and perhaps of any time. It was quite a confrontation, and Darrow was very much the agnostic, had a distinct distaste for Christianity, particularly conservative Christianity.
So what were the, how would you summarize the arguments made on both sides here, beginning with the side that was, trying to test the law the hardest, the side of the American Civil Liberties Union and their proxies there in the classroom or in the courtroom?
Well, first of all, looking at their objectives, Brian publicly declared that he did not oppose the teaching of evolution in the public schools. He just wanted it to be taught as theory rather than a fact. Also, the trial dealt with, you know, what opportunity, if any, do parents have regarding what is taught their children regarding human origins in the public schools. So Brian had that interest. Darrow, in his own autobiography called The Story of My Life, made his position clear. He said that his objective was to make the country aware of evolutionary beliefs and to publicly ridicule the beliefs and perceived intentions of fundamentalist Christians. So he was going right to the jugular on that one. So it really wasn't, it had nothing to do with whether Scopes was guilty or innocent. In fact, Scopes had never taught evolution. He only filled in for the biology teacher the last 2 weeks of the school year. Mr. Ferguson got sick, and John Scopes basically kept students down to a dull roar in the study hall as he prepared for their finals. So ACLU really got the wrong teacher for this thing, but neither side could care less about Scopes' guilt or innocence. The issue was to argue, evolution, particularly the evolution of man. And the evidence presented for evolution by the defense, by Scopes' defense, was really appalling. The primary argument was to equate evolution with embryology, so that if we could show that human beings came from a single cell, i.e. a fertilized egg, then that proves that human beings evolved from a single cell. So the equating of evolution and embryology was used to make evolution seem not only plausible but important to the jury, who for the most part didn't know any better. In fact, Judge Ralston got really confused about what were they talking about. Are they talking about all life coming from a single cell, or are they just talking about human beings coming from a cell? And Darrow responded, well, I'm not quite so clear, but I think it did. All human life comes from one cell. You came from one, and I came from one. Nothing else, a single cell. So you see how clever, I would say devilishly clever, all this was to equate embryology with evolution and say we have to understand how the baby develops in the womb. Ergo, we need to teach the evolution of man from the beast.
This model or this analogy, what, I don't even know what you'd call it, analogy for evolution that is embryology, that kind of, despite it being completely and utterly inaccurate, was something I remember as a child, an argument being made for evolution. Well, look, it even looks like the embryo passes through all the various stages of evolution in the course of 9 months of gestation.
The interesting thing is they weren't even using the recapitulation myth. They were just simply equating evolution with embryology and aging. You're right, the embryo going through the stages of its evolution is a myth that's been refuted many, many times over and yet continues to appear in our textbooks. But to give you an idea just how bad it was, let me just quote word for word the defense lawyer, Dudley Field Malone, from the trial transcript. This is what the jury was told. The embryo becomes a human being when it's born, so it's not human until it's born. Evolution, then, never stops from the beginning of the one cell, i.e. the fertilized egg, until the human being returns in death to lifeless dust. We wish to set before you evidence of this character in order to stress the importance of the theory of evolution, end quote, from page 116 of the trial transcript. In other words, not only embryology, but even aging is equated with evolution.
So that argument, if we were to rehold the Scopes monkey trial today, would there be any reputable evolutionist, any reputable biologist that would even attempt to make such an argument.
No, the one I made, obviously not. I think there would be evolutionists who would try to trot out the recapitulation myth once again, that embryos in the course of their development go through stages of their evolutionary history, if not adult stages, embryonic stages. This has been disproven over and over again and just keeps getting trotted out. It's probably in all biology textbooks today. But it's interesting that there were scientists involved in the trial, but the scientific witnesses were not allowed to make their case. And the reason for that is the judge had declared that, well, since the trial was only about whether Scopes did or did not teach the origin of man from non-human creatures, then we needn't look at whether evolution's true or not. That's not the issue of the trial. But, of course, they tried to make that the real issue of the trial, because neither side was particularly concerned whether Scopes taught evolution when, in fact, he didn't. And I think both sides were aware of this. In fact, the newspapers were made aware of it at the time, that Scopes wasn't the teacher, he didn't teach evolution. This is just a battle over basically teaching evolution in the school. And even the experts, by the way, that they brought in did, in fact, equate evolution with embryology. For example, Dr. Maynard Metcalf, a zoologist at Johns Hopkins at the time, we read in the trial transcript, page 136, and I quote, "I have always been particularly interested in the evolution of the individual organism from the egg, and also the evolution of the organism as a whole from the beginning of life. That has been sort of my interest." End quotes. I mean, it was abysmal. Now, a lot of the testimony of the scientists at the trial were really put into deposition. The jury didn't get a chance to hear them because, as I say, the issue was not whether evolution was true or not, but did Scopes teach it? The bizarre thing is neither side cared on that point. And, of course, Scopes was then accused of teaching evolution because the textbook taught it, as I already read from the textbook used in the Ray County School District. Had taught man had come from non-human beasts, and so Scopes was declared guilty, was fined $100 by the judge. The fine was then quickly overturned by the Tennessee Supreme Court on a technicality. The jury was supposed to decide the fine, not the judge. In any case, the fine couldn't have exceeded $200, and imprisonment was not a provision of violation of the law. So the whole movie, Inherit the Wind, just couldn't be more outrageously incorrect. And yet that movie is still being shown in classrooms in America. I was just at the NEA convention last week, the National Education Association, and I talked with a teacher there who's still showing Inherit the Wind as a reasonable docudrama of what happened in the Scopes trial.
Dr. Minton, are you able to give us about 10 minutes on the other side of the break?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. When we come back, we'll have 10 more minutes with Dr. David Minton. He is a professor emeritus of anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis and speaker and researcher for Answers in Genesis. We're talking about the Scopes Monkey Trial. Jury selection began for that show trial on this day back in 1925. Stay tuned. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida, St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia, and Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. IssuesETC.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's Eric listening in Chicago. Hi, Eric. What's up?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I really encourage people to give to Issues Etc. as it's the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the world, I'd say, on the media.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported, and you can support the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the media by making a secure online donation at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively? Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Scopes Monkey Trial. Jury selection for the show trial began on this day back in 1925. Dr. David Menton is our guest speaker and researcher for Answers in Genesis. I want to get into how the Scopes Monkey Trial was portrayed popularly then and now. You got to that a little bit before the break, but I do have to wonder one question about the content of the trial itself. You had mentioned that the actual textbooks that contained evolutionary teaching, biology textbooks, were very, very clear on the eugenic goals that could be afforded by evolution or an evolutionary worldview. Did those eugenic goals, that eugenics issue, raise its head during the trial, Dr. Menton?
Yes, it did in part. Brian brought it up, but they... opposition tried to keep it primarily on the issue of, you know, that evolution is important to teach in the school. You can't understand embryology without it. Basically the same arguments you hear today. Can't understand science, can't be a scientist without evolution, so we need to indoctrinate in evolution. As for the publicity at the time, I might point out that this trial was an absolutely huge media event. I'm not sure there are many other trials, if any, that are quite as influential. You know, you think of the O.J. Simpson trial, which, by the way, it only took 12 days for the entire selection of the jury and the whole Scopes trial to be completed. Compare that to today's trial. But with regard to publicity, that trial in this little tiny town of Dayton was covered by over 200 newsmen. It was the first trial to get national radio broadcast, and it was the first trial to be broadcast over the transatlantic cable to Europe. So there were like 65 telegraph operators just sending this information out. So it had a huge effect. The newspapers at the time, of course, as you would expect, portrayed Brian in a very unattractive way. I'm looking at a cartoon from the Chicago Tribune. It shows Brian as Don Quixote justing with windmills, and the windmill is evolution. Brian was accused, as anyone would be today, if you dare to doubt the 150-year-old speculations of the Reverend Charles Darwin, you're going to be accused of being opposed to all science. There was a cartoon in the Columbia Dispatch, or Columbus Dispatch in Columbus, Ohio, showing Brian dumping a garbage can full of documents into the Dark Ages, a big abyss. And it said, Brian trashes all knowledge, and the things he's trashing are agriculture, law of gravity, mathematics, mechanics, animal husbandry, medicine, surgery, x-ray, steam, and navigation. In other words, if you dare to question that man has evolved from beasts, then you oppose all of the things I just listed. And that hasn't changed a whit today. I mean, if you dare to question evolutionism, you are accused of basically believing the earth is flat.
So we're back to the totalitarian nature of an evolutionary view, a view that permits absolutely no dissent whatsoever.
There's only two areas of science that I am personally aware of that are given the title of, in quotes, settled science. Settled science is science that no one dare disagree with, and if you do, you will be punished. One area is, of course, evolution, settled science. No teacher dare question it. The other area of settled science is man's responsibility for global warming. These two are considered settled science. In fact, an organization that's been defending evolutionism and critical of creationism called the National Center for Science Education, led formerly by Eugenie Scott, for years now, they've just, harped against creation and argued for evolution in our schools. But now they've added man's responsibility for global warming through CO2 emissions. These two areas are settled science. And I don't care how scholarly you are. If you disagree, you're silenced or punished.
So how would you describe it, kind of setting the Scopes monkey trial, which had no legal import beyond just fines issued to a guy who admitted himself he'd never really even taught evolution. It wasn't his particular area of educational expertise. How would you describe the shift from a classroom wherein creation was taught in some sort of form, perhaps with evolution alongside it, as theories of man's origins, to a time today when creation more or less cannot be taught even as a theory of man's origins in the classroom, not even intelligent design in some places?
Oh, no, intelligent design is vigorously and absolutely opposed and considered to be against all of science, any belief in intelligent design, whatever. So, yeah, this progress has been gradual. It probably got its biggest boost back in the 1950s when the biological science study curriculum got together. I think it was in Boulder, Colorado. And they made sure that, they had come to the conclusion that evolution was not getting its due in the various textbooks used in schools of the day. Back in the 50s, and so they got together and had special versions of textbooks written, you know, the green version, the blue version, the yellow version. But these biology textbooks blended evolution into every chapter so that you couldn't leave it out. Any chapter you looked at, there was evolution, or it used to be it was sort of the last chapter of the book that people didn't quite get to, the teachers, you know. Now they had it blended in, and I think the animosity against any resistance is greater than I have ever seen before in my lifetime. Just in the last 10 or 20 years, I have seen a huge increase in the vitriol and anger against any teaching of intelligent design, even to the point where Christians are now being equated with those who abuse children, child abuse. Richard Dawkins has published and said this, that if you raise your children to be Christians, particularly to believe in a creator, this is a form of child abuse. And the reason it's child abuse is your son or daughter now becomes useless to society. They will be unable to engage in useful work, particularly in any field of the sciences. It's amazing what is being said today. Bill Nye, the science guy, that's his whole central point, is that if we don't indoctrinate in evolution, we'll become a third-rate nation. Science will cease to exist in our country. This from a man who has a bachelor's degree in science, who's never done, as far as I know, of any productive research in science outside of a few years in engineering, spent 5 years of his life as a stand-up comic, and from there went with Walt Disney to teach children in a children's program on TV, and this is the man telling somebody like me, who's had a career of 34 years on the faculty of one of America's distinguished universities, with success in both research and teaching, and yet you're not supposed to be able to do that, according to the evolution view.
Well, that raises one of my final questions here, and I've asked you this before, but it always bears repeating in the course of a conversation like this. Is it possible to teach, if we just stick narrowly to biology, your area of expertise, human anatomy, is it possible to teach biology generally without reference to evolution?
Let me give you a very specific example. The answer, of course, is yes, overwhelmingly yes. But let me give you an unarguable specific example that your audience can chew on. I taught gross anatomy as well as histology. I was course master of histology, that's looking at the body through the light and electron microscope, at Washington University School of Medicine for 34 years. Occasionally, some of the faculty there would bring up evolution, but students just kind of blew it off because they believed in it. They just knew it wasn't important enough to be on the exam, and they knew that any evolutionary comments their professors made when talking about any organ of the body was not going to be important in the practice of medicine. So how can a subject deemed to be so important that people get downright angry and strident with those who dare to disagree, how can evolution be that important when it contributes nothing, I repeat, nothing, to the practice of medicine? In medicine, we deal with all of the organs of the body. I gave lectures on essentially all the organs of the body at one time or another. I never bothered to bring evolution up. You know, you can talk about a urinary system or a kidney. If you want, you can save the last 5 minutes to discuss how did we come to have kidneys before there were any kidneys. It adds absolutely nothing to our understanding. It adds nothing to our ability to practice medicine. And so here we are belaboring students with what is really a worldview, an origins myth for atheists, when in fact it contributes nothing to empirical science, certainly not to medicine.
Finally, then, Dr. Menten, how would you, in a nutshell, respond to someone who says, and I'm sure you've heard this in one form or another, look, back in 1925, the Scopes monkey trial proved by evidence that evolution is true. How would you respond?
Maybe the best way to respond is to give Dr. Maynard Metcalf, he's from Johns Hopkins, he was asked to define by the judge, what is the fact of evolution? Here is the fact of evolution. It's all one sentence. Evolution, I think, means the change in the final analysis. I think it means the change of an organism from one character into different characters. And by character, I mean its structure or its behavior or its function or its method of development from the egg or anything else. The change of an organism from one set characteristic which characterizes it into a different condition, characterized by a different set of characteristics. It goes on and on and on like this. It's absolute rubbish. It says nothing. In fact, most of the arguments, in fact, I would say essentially all of the arguments presented in deposition by the experts at the time today would be essentially useless. For example, what was the principal argument for the evolution of man? It was Piltdown Man that was subsequently shown to be a hoax. But Piltdown Man was discovered in 1920, before the trial in 1925, and it was the premier evidence that man came from a beast. Of course, this particular fossil turned out to be a human skull, probably from the 1300s or 1400s, buried in the Piltdown Quarry back at the time of the plagues. This pieces of a skull was combined with the mandible of a modern female orangutan and then a canine tooth from a chimp, and this fooled the evolutionists for 40 years. But it said there were theologians at the time of the Scopes trial who abandoned the whole idea that man was specially created and believed instead that man came from beasts on the strength of this hoax.
Dr. David Menten is Associate Professor of Anatomy at Washington University in St. Louis and speaker for and researcher for Answers in Genesis. You'll find out more about Answers in Genesis at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Menten, it is always a pleasure. Keep up the good work, and thanks for being our guest.
Well, thank you. And if people want to hear more about this, get on the Answers in Genesis website, answersingenesis.org, and look up my video, Inherently Wind, A Hollywood History of the Scopes Trial.
When we come back, we're going to be talking with Pastor Matt Richard about a kind of theology you've never heard of by name, probably, Keswick theology, but you have certainly encountered it in American evangelicalism. I'm Todd Wilkin. More of Issues, Etc. right after this. Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at sothl.com.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.